Our part of the world has been abuzz about wolves for a while now. Wolf numbers continue to grow in Oregon, and this year featured the first birth of pups in the wild west of the Cascades in the better part of a century, as the famous traveling wolf OR7 settled down and started a family. Listen to the way we humanize wolves, almost as if they could talk or something. A journalist and wildlife biologist are now on tour in the region as two talking wolves. They made several stops at Southern Oregon University yesterday, and they'll be making a stop in Roseburg tonight. Todd Wilkinson is a journalist and the author of Last Stand, Ted Turner's Quest to Save a Troubled Planet. Todd, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Great to be here.
Bob Ferris is with us as well. He's a wildlife biologist and the executive director of Cascadia Wildlands. Bob, welcome to you.
Happy to be here as well.
So why two talking wolves?
I think that's the thing that connects Todd and I, is that and Turner as well. I mean, we all, one juncture of our lives, have worked on wolves. And wolves are a good topic to bring people together on or to talk about conflicts.
And so tell us about your careers, each of you, and we'll start with you, Todd.
Well, from Minnesota, started as a violent crime reporter in Chicago, came west almost 30 years ago, have been covering the Yellowstone region, environmental issues, traveling globally for some stories, and met Ted Turner 20 years ago writing some magazine pieces, and then over the last decade, began interviewing him and spent 7 years with the man, having unlimited access. And with regard to wolves, he's got the largest wolf pack in the lower 48, right in the middle of his ranch outside of Bozeman, right in the middle of a bison herd that has 5,000 animals. And so Ted has a pretty novel perspective, and he's studying that. He has staff scientists who are studying the wolves on his property. And so I think that provides a valuable perspective. In addition, being from Minnesota, where they've got the largest wolf population in the lower 48, 3,000 animals, it's a different cultural mindset there versus the West.
Bob Ferris, as you've watched wolf reintroduction and recovery efforts across the West, I mean, is Ted Turner's effort completely private and not involving government money or efforts, or what's happening there?
Ted has been very generous and innovative, and it's been interesting to watch because I first heard about his efforts about the time that I got engaged in wolf recovery about 20 years ago, and he's hired the best people. It's interesting, the veterinarian that he uses at this point was the same vet in California, from California, who taught me how to use tranquilizer darts. So I mean, I know the people that he works with, and they're good, very qualified folks.
Is Ted Turner an unlikely figure in conservation? I mean, we're talking about a guy who made jillions of dollars here, and people with jillions of dollars, I mean, yeah, they get philanthropic and everything, but it tends to be often on the coasts or overseas, or, you know, they find things to do with their money that doesn't generally involve ranches in Montana.
That's a great question. So there's the public perception of Ted Turner, the caricature, the mouth of the South, the media mogul.
Right.
But he's really lived a parallel life during the whole time. He's been involved in conservation, helped pioneer the conservation easement movement, second largest property owner in the country with 2 million acres. And as Jane Fonda, his former wife, said, Turner is driven to help save the natural world in part because it's an effort to save himself. He had a pretty brutal childhood growing up, and nature was really his only refuge, and he's become this pathfinder as an eco-capitalist. We know that if we're going to solve these problems, we need to engage business. And so my book deals with that significant other half of Ted Turner, and I can say that most people who think they know Ted Turner, I don't think they do.
This leads into a broader discussion, then, of capitalism and the intersection of capitalism with environmentalism, which people normally think are poles apart. And as I was thinking about this, opened up the book, right there atop chapter one is the quote from a former Sierra Club officer talking about capitalism and what it does actually to the environment in a lot of cases. Could you give us some perspective there, Todd?
Well, you know, we face such monumental problems, and the perception is that environment versus economy is chronically at odds. And as Turner says, that's a false dichotomy. In fact, one can enhance the other, and particularly when we think about cost to society and things called externalities that economists use, that society is paying the cost, but it's not factored into the process.
Like pollution, things like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what Turner, I think, does is he represents an important handhold that as we discuss these things in the abstract, he's actually doing it on his property. He's got wolves and bison on his ranch. He's making a profit on them. He's pouring the profits back in. He's not some Daddy Warbucks Walter Mitty, you know, fetish for nature. He's actually doing it because, and this is important, he knows that you can't pass along conservation as a debt proposition to your family members. Ranchers, loggers on private land, farmers know this, and that's part of the problem in the country.
We're talking to the Two Talking Wolves, Todd Wilkinson, journalist and author of Last Stand, a book about Ted Turner's wolf conservation efforts. Bob Ferris is a wildlife biologist and executive director of Cascadia Wildlands. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org or check out the picture of Todd and Bob from a few minutes ago on our Facebook page. Bob, have you been to the Ted Turner operation and seen the whole range of recovery efforts?
I've been to a couple of facilities there, and they've been very active in trying to get wolf recovery to occur in the Southern Rockies region, which is an area that I've argued that we need to have wolves for a number of different ecological reasons. And they were driving that process, and Mike Phillips with the Turner Endangered Species Fund has been a champion of that effort for, I would say, 18 years, 19 years.
So this is not a window dressing effort in your mind. It's a real bona fide, concerted effort to bring wolves and other wild people, wild things back. People.
And wild people, yeah. I've worked in, before I came to Defenders of Wildlife, which was where I entered into the wolf arena, I worked for an organization that helps corporations manage their lands for wildlife. And we were very aware of greenwashing and could spot it right away. This isn't greenwashing. He's sincere about this, but at the same time, he also directs his people that, you know, this has to be a going concern. We have to do conservation, but it has to be a going concern. And I've heard that from his staff repeatedly, not just from Todd.
What do you make of the overall efforts to bring the gray wolf back to its some good numbers anyway, and particularly now that we're beginning to talk about delisting west of the Cascades or east of the Cascades?
It's a mixed bag, and I always sort of, you know, because I have a long term perspective on it, I think about where we were before we started, and I came into this just before the first Yellowstone reintroduction when we had really no wolves in the West. And we're a lot better now than we were then. The problem is that a lot of people have worked really hard to spread all the myths and falsehoods about wolves. And they get some traction in some areas. And, you know, we're still fighting that battle. And that we need to work on. But then when you look at OR7 or Journey, and we've been calling the female wolf Wandering Wanda. I mean, for me, that is, you know, I was driving north through Dunsmuir when I heard about the third pup, at least the that they knew that they had more than two and probably more than three. And I'm not an emotional person. You were asking me about smiling earlier before. I'm not all that emotive, but we rolled down the windows of the car, my wife and I, and we howled. We were ecstatic about that. So there's great joy, there's concern, and it's drama, you know, on many different levels.
It really is that. Todd, as an environmental journalist, you've talked to so many people over the years, I'm sure, for so many different stories, but was the process of writing Last Stand a bit different because you got to talk to some major figures outside the movement as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And Ted and I established some ground rules for early on so that this wasn't a hagiography. He granted me unlimited access. I wanted to be able to ask him anything that I wanted. He agreed. And in turn, he couldn't edit anything.
He didn't get a right to review after it had already been written.
No, he read it, but it was just for minor details of veracity, not in my interpretation. And so it was, in fact, very different because we got into some really deep psychological terrain. Ted had a father who was abusive, who taught him this business ethic, and his dad ultimately took his own life when Ted was 24 years old, and it left this deep impression on Ted. And It really started his career as a businessman trying to rescue this billboard company that turned into CNN 24-hour news. But again, it was delving into the trying to get him to open up about what his motivation is for wanting to save the environment. And, you know, by the time he's gone, he will have poured all of his lands and every last cent back into conservation. So he's taken measures with his will that he's all in.
How far does he or anybody else, Bob Ferris, want to take the rewilding of the West? I mean, we talk about reintroduction of wolves, potentially reintroduction of grizzlies. We had the discussion not terribly long ago about, you know, there are islands in the West, perhaps in the Cascades in Oregon and California, southern Oregon and northern California, that could be home to grizzly bears. I mean, how far is anybody talking about going with rewilding, and how far is Cascadia Wildlands, for that matter?
I think we're looking more at a vision similar to what Ted and his staff hold in terms of looking at, historic species that many people experienced when they moved into the West that were quickly eradicated. Grizzly bears, I'm supportive of, but not as aggressive on, just because they're animals with a little bit different attitude about interlopers in their habitat, and so we have to be cautious about where they are and all that. Wolves, a much different story. We were sitting around talking about comfort levels with, say, cougars and bears and wolves. And wolves come out on the "we're not that afraid of them when we're close to them" sort of thing. Talking with biologists that worked on the animals, and then greater concern with cougars and grizzly bears are kind of, up there fairly high. But we have a lot of wild places where these animals can go, and we're not talking about bringing back T-Rex or ground sloths or critters like that. So it's a reasonable rewilding.
Let's talk about the coexistence, though, that you were talking about, Todd, with wolves and bison on Ted Turner's ranch. I mean, he wants to make this a going concern, but is there much predation by the wolves on the bison?
There's some. But he looks at it as it's part of building wolf carrying capacity. And the interesting thing is that through the scientific research, the assumption out there in ranch country is that bison presence stresses cows, whether it's cows or whether it's cow bison, and that thus affects pregnancy rates, for example. Well, they did an experiment, and they looked at bison that were exposed to wolves and bison that were not, and except but for a narrow window of time, the stress levels do not go up. Remember, we talk about post-Pleistocene rewilding. Well, bison are post-Pleistocene animals, as are wolves. And so they evolve together, and bison really don't get stressed out by wolves. The only time is this narrow window when they have their calves. But an interesting thing with bison being sociable animals is that those groups of mothers with calves, they're pretty protective of their young. And as one of Ted's veterinarians said, they're very adept at putting a horn into the side of a wolf, and wolves respect that.
Huh. All right. So Ted Turner is the Ted we're talking about, the topic, the focus of Todd Wilkinson's book, Last Stand, Ted Turner's Quest to Save a Troubled Planet. He is one of the two talking wolves. The other is Bob Ferris, the wildlife biologist and executive director of Cascadia Wildlands. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. And let me mention again before you go, in Roseburg tonight at the Umpqua Arts Center at 7 p.m. All right. Thanks again so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.